We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 317. Opening weekend in the book, Scott. Oh, man, what a tour de force of suck that was on Saturday and Sunday. But I think the appropriate way to start this episode is you need to apologize to not only me, but all of our listeners out there for predicting 19-0 against the Baltimore Orioles. And here we are on Monday or after the game on Sunday night, and the Yankees are 1-2.
Okay. Here's the deal. I will never apologize for anything I say. The first thing is, one, you are the reason we do these bold predictions, quote unquote. You copped out with your wipe my ass little prediction or whatever it is. You copped out, didn't actually make predictions, but I did. I stuck to them. I made some. And not only that, when I did this Baltimore prediction. It was me talking about the Yankees should win every single game because they should. And that's the damn truth. They should win against this team. I actually said 17 wins, didn't say 19, but
you started out
19 they should.
And then you realize you stuck your foot in your mouth.
No. I just knew I wasn't going there.
Couched it a bit.
You were egging it on for 19. It's fine. It doesn't matter. 19, 17, it doesn't matter. They should win a shit ton of games against the Baltimore Orioles because they're a horrible team. And anybody who thinks going into a game with the Orioles that the Yankees should lose, you're crazy. You're absolutely crazy. So when you think of that mentality and you said, this is like, I mean, I'm not talking about like, oh yeah, the Yankees playing the Red Sox, Yankees playing the Astros, Yankees playing the Oakland A's, they should win it. I'm like, okay, yeah, they should win it. They're playing well right now, but I could see them losing it. I can't see them losing games to the Orioles.
Well, and if then they play this weekend, like that, happens. I could see it because that was ugly.
Yeah, we got beat by a bunch of people that nobody has any idea who they are. Any idea. And why did they lose? Because they played terribly. And it's so frustrating to like start the season off with a series like this. It's so frustrating to start a season off with a series that is just sloppy.
And you said I didn't really make predictions. I think that's unfair. I think I had some predictions in there.
No, your predictions were horseshit.
What I was really doing...
And you know it. And
what
you know
I was
it.
Really doing is just shedding light on the fact that predictions are stupid. And no one's ever right in their bold predictions. Every baseball writer out there, every Twitter baseball person out there, everybody who follows baseball always has bold predictions. And guess how many of them end up being right? None of them. They're stupid. Yet we continue to do them. That was what I was trying to go for. I think some people got what I was doing with the wipe my ass and the John Sterling London home run calls, which I still think is my best one. But still, here we are after an ugly weekend of baseball. It almost feels like, you know, opening day was Thursday afternoon. Then Friday, they didn't play. It's like, I don't even remember Thursday. Thursday, we were all so excited. Everything went right on Thursday. Everything went wrong Saturday, Sunday, including a 3+ hour rain delay just to torture us even more.
A 3+ hour rain delay, then a 3 hour and 48-minute game on top of that. So yeah, to the people all that were at the stadium and stayed the entire time. I saw Joe's McFly was in there making videos and like doing things and stayed the entire game. Like tip of the cap because that's a long ass day on a Sunday.
8+ hours.
Yeah, in just miserable weather. That's a long day. But yeah, it was it started off with a bang, right? Like we started off with Luke Voit being Paul Bunyan and hitting that 3-run home run to start the game, to start the season, and Tanaka, you know, pitching well. And then even into Saturday, like with Paxton, like coming out, throwing up zeros, pitching well, and exciting because it's exciting when you see a left-hander get up on the mound and throw 97 miles an hour and paint corners. Like, that's cool. That's fun to watch. We have a guy like that can do that now. And I'm really excited for him during the season. But, you know, ever since he gave up a couple runs on some nonsense, the wheels fell off for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah. We're going to get into everything. I think we're going to start with just bitching about all the things that went wrong and really just highlighting why they did end up losing 2 out of 3 to a terrible team. There were some positives, though. Like you said, Paxton, I loved what DJ LeMahieu did all weekend. Tulo hits his first homer. So there's some positives we're going to talk about. Quickly, though, let's just remind people, April 13th is the first BP Crew regular season event of the season. It is a Saturday afternoon game. It's like a week and a half away. This Wednesday, correct, is the cutoff day to buy tickets?
Yes, this Wednesday is the final, it's the cutoff so that we can get all of the t-shirts in. Very last day that we will be selling any tickets.
It is a great deal, $69. You get a game ticket in section 205. Your game ticket comes with a hot dog and a beer in the stadium. You know how much that costs ordinarily, so right there, you're already coming out ahead. Plus a custom t-shirt. They're awesome every single time. I had somebody on Twitter asked me today, hey, do you have a picture of last year's t-shirt? I said, everyone was different. Every one of them is awesome. I sent that video that you put out today from Bronx Pinstripes. So if you guys didn't come to an event last year and are just wondering, you know, what are these events all about? Go check out the little video montage on at Bronx Pinstripes that was tweeted out on Sunday. You kind of get the vibe of what these events are. Just a bunch of people, you know, having beers, talking Yankees baseball, getting rowdy during the game. You know, we were up on the Jumbotron and all that kind of stuff. They're awesome. Cannot wait for the first event. Hopefully by that time, Yankees are playing a little bit better baseball.
Absolutely. I mean, they better be. They're going to be playing the White Sox too, so we should be scoring some runs.
That's right, scoring some runs. And they had billions of opportunities this weekend. What does Aaron Boone like to say? Traffic on the base paths? Do you think there was enough traffic on the base paths this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, they on today, well, just talking about today, because it's fresh in the mind still, 28 runners left on base. 28 left,
combined,
left on base.
Combined when you add up the tally of everyone. Because, so
That's not just runners in scoring position. That's just left on base total.
So there is a little bit. I've gone back and forth with people on this. So there's team left on base and player left on base. When you add up individually how many each person on the team left on base, it was 28. But you know, you can only leave a guy on base. The guy can only be left on base once, if that makes sense, for a team. But still, doesn't matter. 11 men left on base on Saturday. They were 3-for-9 with runners in scoring position that day. And then 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position on Sunday. 14 as a team left on base. Like you said, 28 when you tally it all up for each player in the box score. Saturday, I point to Andujar's ground ball double play in the first inning. The Orioles are bullpenning, so you get the first guy in there, Carnes, on the ropes, let him off the hook. Jimmy Yacobonis from Jersey comes in, actually looks pretty nasty, and shut the Yankees' bats down. And then Sunday, they got changeup to death by John Means. Like these pitchers who, like you said, never heard of, don't even belong in the major leagues, half of them. Making the Yankees batters, like Stanton is up there, swings and misses on 3 changeups. Like it appeared Giancarlo Stanton just found out that a changeup was a real pitch today. Like he didn't know that thing existed before that at bat. That's how he looked.
You know, the changeup was used often by
every pitch, every strike was a changeup. Yeah, fastball high and away, changeup, swing and strike. It's like, how many times do I have to watch that?
That kid has, you know, a pretty good changeup for that's his pitch. Obviously, that's his pitch, and the Yankees could not hit it last year around this time. We're watching Stanton struggle to hit anything that's high in the zone that has, you know, fastball velocity. We'll always remember the at bat by Justin Verlander, just going fastball, strike 3. He couldn't touch it, and we saw him struggle actually to get around on the high fastball again. Even after he worked that walk, which could have very well been a strikeout, but it was a struggle to see it. And when you're seeing these guys with no names that have names, but nobody has any idea what they are, and they're just dominating your insane lineup of batters. When you look at all of the names in this lineup card, and you see how badly they were abused by this Orioles staff, it's embarrassing. And I can't believe I'm saying that on game 3 of the season.
But it's not even like they dominated them, because the Yankees had runners on base every single inning.
When it mattered, they didn't do a damn thing.
No, I know that. But every inning, they're getting guys on base. And that's what happened last year, too. That's why it's so frustrating. And I understand the Yankees just in general are going to probably have a lower batting average with runners in scoring position because they have so many opportunities. There's just so many damn opportunities. You can't come through all the time. But what were they? 6-for-29, I believe, in the first 3 games of the season. The one hit they had on Thursday with runners in scoring position was Voit's 3-run bomb.
Yeah.
So like,
and LeMahieu then pretty much carries the rest of it.
LeMahieu was fantastic. Every at bat he was battling, putting the bat on the ball. Exactly what we said, you know, exactly.
Balance. They need the balance. They got LeMahieu for that balance in the lineup to give them a different look, to give them a different at bat, to work the count, to get the singles the other way, to spray the ball all over the place. You know, kind of how baseball was used to be and was fun and how it's meant to be played, to like hit the ball where the people are not. Not just swing and miss or hit a home run. It's a different type of player, and he's doing exactly that.
It's also the tone of his at bats where he was locked in, and Judge had a lot of good at bats too. He had I know he struck out a few times in a couple of big spots on Sunday, but he also had a two RBI single at one point. But these other guys, the Stanton at bats, Gardner's at bats were terrible all weekend. Voit over the weekend struggled, and Duhar, I think my dad texted me, he said, "And Duhar's left the city of Manhattan on base, and it's only game three." Like, it's just like,
I don't see with Andujar though. It's for me, it's a little different because I think he was just pressing a bit and just wasn't. He's still making contact and putting bat to ball and putting the ball in play. It's just I feel like he was pressing a little too hard early and was just not making great contact. He does leave the guys on obviously because when he was up, but you know he's not sitting there with like a meaningless at bat and striking out and just like having a bad at bat. To me, it feels different when you're putting the bat to the ball still with the runners on base.
And the approach like was frustrating. Like you hear O'Neill on the broadcast. I think it was Sanchez's at bat, not the home run, but the one before that he was analyzing, where it was change up, and he was out in front every time. O'Neill's like, Sanchez is not trying to go the other way on these change ups. He's trying to pull the ball into the left field seats, and it's just not going to work.
Well, he did. He pulled the ball in the left field.
But it was the next at bat. It was the solo home run. It wasn't when there was two runners on base and like a line drive to right field would have been beautiful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, you know, when there's nobody on base and you're a guy like Sanchez, that pitcher most likely is probably going to take some more chances too with that particular situation. So it's a very different, you know, when you're looking at the at bats and the timing of the at bats and then the result of the at bat, you know, it's not what you want. You want the home run with the runners on base. Yes, you love the home run even when there's nobody on base, but you can just see that there's a different approach and it's unfortunate. But again, third game of the season.
No, I know.
I gotta pull myself back a little bit because I feel like because we've done the show, you know, throughout the year for this is now our fourth year, we really haven't stopped. Like it's like the season stops, but it doesn't kinda. So the frustration level comes back very fast.
Well, here's the thing.
And it came back very fast today.
Here's the thing. So I hate that if I criticize the team, if I tweet something out and it's criticism, you get half the people agreeing and half the people saying, it's March. What are you complaining about? What's the date that I can complain and not hear that? Like, what is the cutoff point in the game? Because it's not like the Yankees just went out there against a good team. And it's like Justin Verlander shuts you down for 8 innings. Like, tip of the cap, let's move on to the next day. No. The Yankees had a billion people on base and they couldn't get a freaking base hit. Like, why am I not allowed to be upset about that? Even if it's game one, game 10, game 100, or game 162. Like, every game counts equal. So they squandered opportunities against the worst team in baseball and they lost 2 out of 3 at home on opening home weekend.
Yeah, that's not good.
Like, so what does it matter if it's only March 31st as we're sitting here recording?
Yeah, no. I have to tell myself that I think sometimes just to like pull myself back and reel my head back in and not get too frustrated. This is more of like self-medication here and just trying to talk myself off of a ledge that I'm at for game three and like realize that there's no ledge at game three.
No, but neither of us are saying that the team's done.
Come on.
But that would be asinine. And anyone who is saying that is either trolling or an idiot.
Like believing if someone thinks the team's going to go 19-0 against another team.
But like, why aren't we? And I think we are. But why? You know, we are allowed to be frustrated over what happened this weekend.
No doubt. And one of the reasons I think why it's so frustrating is because it's the same problems. It's the same problems that we had last year. The frustrations that are coming about right now, early in the season, first series. Are the same problems that we've had last year. And I honestly, like the year before that, the runners in scoring position, the average with the guys with runners on is just, it's I feel like it's never going to go away. I feel like it'll never go away. And maybe it's just also because of the changing of the time and the way that baseball is played now, we're going to see that more and more, is that those averages will be lower when there are runners in scoring position because it's so hit or miss. And when you see the problems that plagued you last year and ended your season come back to you in the very first weekend of the series, of the season, then that's frustrating. So
I think that's exactly what Judge was talking about in his Saturday post game comments, where he said we have to have the mindset that our backs are against the walls every single game.
Yeah.
You know, he was talking, harping back to the 17 playoffs where they were down to Cleveland, down to Houston, played with their backs against the walls. And obviously, like, no one is saying that you could possibly go through a 162 game season and treat it like you're down 0-2 in a playoff series. Like, that is not feasible. However, I think what Judge was really saying is we cannot go out there and just waste these opportunities like we had on Saturday, and I'm sure, like he's saying, wasted opportunities on Sunday, and expect to win a championship, because it won't happen if they continue to waste those opportunities, especially against teams you should be crushing.
This is, I mean, isn't this really the evolution of Aaron Judge just becoming more of a professional, more of a leader, and these guys all having time under their belt now and knowing what they know? And, you know, whether they meant to or not, but in the past probably took some games early in the season, maybe middle of the season, for granted a little bit, thinking that, oh, there is the next day, not having that mentality. Well, every single win matters, because when you look at the end of the season, you can look back and count the losses that should have been wins, and there's your division, or there's your playoff spot, or whatever. I think this is more like it's a mindset that needs to happen. But I think it only happens at a certain point when they start turning that professionalism up and realizing where they are and what they're doing.
Right. And we talked about, you know, 6 out of the first 9 against Baltimore, only 5 games in April against teams that had winning records last year. Do you know what that means? That means games are going to be harder later in the season when you got to play more games against Boston and more games against Tampa and Oakland and Cleveland and Minnesota, teams that are better than the Orioles and the White Sox and the Tigers.
Well, yeah. I mean, every team is probably going to be better than, you just said, 3 of the worst teams. I mean, the Tigers are going to be really, really
But that's
bad.
What I'm saying. That's who they're playing.
I understand that.
Like,
yeah,
this,
I get it.
These couple weeks, like, they start the season playing Baltimore, Detroit, and then the White Sox.
And that's the thing. Like, they have to take advantage of that in front of them. Like, this is a very good opportunity. And whether it comes right now in the beginning of the season, or if it comes in July, or if it comes in June or August or whatever, it doesn't matter when this opportunity comes. It's still the same opportunity, and they have to take advantage of it. So I think that's one of the things where people are overlooking. Like, yeah, okay, it's the first weekend of the season. It's the first 3 series of the season. But guess what? That's a lot of games when you look at it against bad teams. That if this little stretch came in August, you better damn well expect every single fan is thinking they got to come out with an insane record and will lose their shit if they don't. But now, because it's April, it doesn't matter as much. No, that's just not accurate. That's just not true. It does. They have to take advantage of it.
You know what else I saw this weekend that you see every single season, and it's officially annoyed me. It's the people who say, well, you know, the 1998 Yankees started out 1-4.
Right. 1-4.
But it's like, how long are we going to talk about the 1998 Yankees starting out 1-4?
How many years? We're
21 years away.
There's
from
no
that.
Correlation between any team. Maybe like back-to-back years if you have some guys. But even like you go 2 years apart, the rosters look totally different. So who gives a shit?
You want a correlation for you? Hey, last year the Yankees really struggled in the early part of the season against Baltimore, and it came back to haunt them when they didn't win the division. Oh, look what's happening again. There's a
and correlation. This is a much worse Baltimore team too. This is a team
that had Manny Machado,
and lots of other guys that are good.
Jonathan
Beckham,
Scope.
Who's a much better Beckham, who would probably be their best player right now. Adam Jones, you know, they had a bunch of players. Yeah, Scope for the first half, so they actually had some players on that team.
Yeah, you know what else we saw this weekend is just bad defense. We're going to talk about Paxton's start. I thought his defense totally let him down in the 6th inning. Sanchez had a couple terrible throws into the runners. One of them caromed off the runner, then the other one went into center field. Like, Gary Sanchez his strongest part of his defense was his throwing arm. He was, obviously we all know his blocking issues. He was a pretty average league average receiver as far as framing ability and stuff like that, but he was an above average thrower. Well, what happened this weekend? Because he made bad throws.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's the ball sailed on him. It's early in the season, Andrew. They got to get their bearings. They got to get into the games. The weather was cold. It was raining.
It was pretty nice on Saturday. It was like 60 degrees in New York on Saturday.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I do understand this. Like, in the beginning of the season, all teams are probably going to play pretty sloppy. Like, it's usually some sloppy games going on in the first couple weeks. That's usually the case. And maybe that's what the Orioles is like, the great equalizer, the sloppiness of the games. And when you're a bad team and you play sloppy, you know, maybe you don't play as sloppy on a given day. I don't know, whatever it is. But they just got to get it together. That's it. That's all that matters.
Indulge me as I criticize some bullpen management on Sunday afternoon. So the Yankees.
Who are we criticizing, though, first? That's what I want to know.
So it might be Boone. It might be the Nerds. I don't know. There's some math in here, so I think I'm going to blame this one on the Nerds. So the Yankees are chipping away, and it's 5-3. Down by 2 runs, Zach Britton warms up. They don't bring him in. The Yankees then get a home run by Gary Sanchez to make it 5-4, and then they bring in Stephen Tarpley, who promptly gives up a 2-run home run. So they were down by 2 and were warming up Zach Britton, and then they were down by 1, which last time I checked, you know, I'm not one of Brian Cashman's nerds, but I can know the difference between 1 and 2. 1 is less than 2. Then they bring in Stephen Tarpley.
Right.
How does that make sense?
Because Stephen Tarpley is the better pitcher. Is that maybe he's also a left-hander? So maybe they think that Stephen Tarpley's stuff is better. Here's the bigger atrocity in this situation. They had a right-handed bat up with Ricard, who did hit the home run. They had first base open. There were 2 outs. There was a runner on second base. The runner was already in scoring position. Who was on deck? Chris Davis, one of the worst baseball players that has ever played this game, who has a ridiculous contract and is just like, he's 0 for the century. The guy can't hit anything. You have a lefty on the mound, a righty up who hits lefties well. I looked up his stats, Ricard. Like, if you're looking at his splits, they're much better against left-handed pitching. I'm looking at the numbers. I'm saying, like, this is not the guy I wanted to go against Tarpley. I'm looking who's on deck, and it's you know, swing and miss Crash Davis over there. What are you doing? Put the guy on first base. Or if we're not going to do that, how about we bring in somebody to pitch to the right-handed bat instead of going at with Tarpley? There were so many things that just didn't make any goddamn sense.
It was like they were punting the game, even though it was still a very close game.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And then Canley comes in,
immediately loads the bases.
Yeah.
And then they start warming up Chad Green. It's like, at this point, like, what is it? And Canley ended up getting out of it, which is like beside the point. It's no outs with the bases loaded and Chad Green starts warming up. Best case scenario, you stall, you bring in Chad Green, and he only gives up 1 run. And then you burn Chad Green for probably no reason.
The numbers must have said that that Tommy Canley was going to throw more strikes after he walked 3 guys.
Right. Backs, you know, against the wall. That's what Judge is talking about. You got to play like your backs against the wall. So maybe Canley, all he needs to do, he doesn't need to drink Red Bull. He just needs to Houdini. It's like we found a new Houdini.
Well, no, he needed to put himself in a situation that was like, you know, almost like drinking a Red Bull. And that's loading the bases.
Yeah, get the heart beat.
Putting
up.
The bases up. Yeah, you got to get it going. Rate. So let's walk them going. Walk the bases full. And then I'll try to get out of it. But, you know, I mean, he even had three balls on the batter with the bases loaded too. So he was very, very close to a disaster and somehow worked out of it. But yeah, it's the inning before with the Tarpley giving up the home run to Joey Ricard and having Davis on deck with the base wide open. I mean, there's nobody standing on first base. It was wide open.
Well, you guys, you know, probably did not enjoy the results of the Yankees games. Maybe you did well in fantasy baseball this weekend. I did a draft. I don't know. I tweeted out. I saw some people replying. I did not do well because I picked a lot of Yankees on Saturday. I thought they were going to come out swinging. I had Voit on my lineup. I had Judge in my lineup and Paxton. So as you can imagine, I did not do well. But I did it on a new app that we have been talking about. It's called Draft. If you love fantasy baseball, then you need to try our new favorite app called Draft. It's daily fantasy baseball, but not like the other guys. on Draft. You play live snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league. Drafts last for just one night, and once you're done drafting, that's it. There are no trades. You don't have to worry about the waiver wire. You just set it and forget it. The best part is you can play for cold hard cash and get paid out the next day. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. Scott, I know you've done fantasy baseball in the past as well, but it's a long season, so sometimes you just want to get in for a day, get some action for a day, and then move on.
No, there's no doubt about it. I like the fact that it's short and you can do it. So join me on Draft today. Just search Draft in your app store or play right from your computer at draft.com. And for a limited time only, the Bronx Pinstripe Show listeners get a free entry into a real money baseball draft when you make your first deposit. You have to use the promo code Bronx. That's right. Play real money games for free. Just use the promo code Bronx when you make your first deposit. Search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and enter promo code Bronx.
All right, let's talk about some positives because I think there were some this weekend. Paxton, he made his debut. He got the loss, but I think his defense let him down. There was a couple soft hits in the inning. Gardner made a weak throw from center field. You know, the Yankees do really miss Hicks's arm in center. And then Gary Sanchez had a throwing error. And then before you knew it, the Orioles had the lead. But what I saw from Paxton in innings 1-5, he was working efficiently. He was throwing a ton of fastballs and he was throwing a ton of strikes.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, the kid's throwing 97 miles per hour. He's just like that prototypical Hoss lefty up there. And it's fun to watch, man. I was really enjoying watching him go. He's got that mentality. It just seems like he's going to do well here and fit in, and really doesn't seem like much bothers him. He just kind of goes about his business, and you know, he was working the counts well, you know, getting ahead. And like you said, throwing a ton of fastballs, and we're seeing upper 90s in there. Fun to watch. I'm really excited about him. I think he's going to be very good for this team.
Power fastball up in the zone has been his bread and butter pitch. He's thrown in his career about 65% fastballs. And I think it's very interesting on how this works with the Yankees coaching staff and Rothschild, because we know like they like to go off-speed heavy. Tanaka throws a ton of off-speed pitches. Sonny Gray bitched and moaned about them wanting him to throw too many sliders. So how is Paxton going to develop with this coaching staff this season? I think it's really interesting to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, so when you're looking at the, you know, the ratio of breaking balls to fastballs that Rothschild is in his history and how he, you know, he mentors people and teaches them and kind of a philosophy on his end. You know, I think that at the same time, you're looking at a guy who went on the field when he's been pitching. I know he's been limited to, you know, he's not a 200 inning guy so far. He's had these injuries that have crept up on him. But you're seeing a guy that has success working off the fastball. I don't think Rothschild is going to go in and say, okay, I see a good fastball. I see him working well off that fastball. Let's change that totally. I think you might see little wrinkles. I think one of the big reasons why, you know, we saw other guys like, quote, Sonny Gray was throwing less was because the pitches weren't effective. Like, he just wasn't executing. I'm seeing Paxton, I mean, granted, it's only been one start, and we've seen him only for, you know, five-plus innings, but the guy can execute his fastball. He can work off of his fastball in a very efficient way. So, you know, I'm sure his numbers will be a little different than what we've seen in the past, but I don't think they're going to be totally drastically different.
No, and I don't expect him to go from throwing 65% fastballs down to 40% or 30% fastballs. But we saw that kind of we saw a precipitous drop in Sonny Gray. There was a point in the season.
But that's because he's a bad pitcher right now.
And he's probably a bad example too, right?
Right. Yeah, I think so.
But we've seen other guys come over
for a lot of things.
J-Hap stunk today, but J-Hap last year came over and still threw a ton of fastballs. You know, it's kind of interesting. Paxton and Hap have similar approaches. Paxton's stuff is a lot better. He's a lot younger. But as far as, like, you know, power fastball, in on righties, up in the zone, that is the kind of pitcher that both Hap and Paxton are.
Yeah, I mean, Hap doesn't obviously have the same pop, and he's in there, you know, he's got to locate. He's got to locate more and you know, rely on his location, whereas Paxton can, you know, miss and still blow a fastball by a guy. Hap doesn't really have that luxury. Hap's like, what, 93, 94 max. But yeah, I mean, they're similar in approach in that way. I see that.
Yeah, and I don't know what happened with Hap today. He had a bad spring. You know, throw out spring numbers. We joked about that a million times. But he got hit pretty hard in the first couple innings. He only threw four innings today against the Orioles. I thought it was weird. Like, we sit through a 3-hour rain delay, and then they start the game and it's still raining. And then it stops raining like in the second inning. Like, if you're going to wait 3 hours and 17 minutes, why don't you just wait another 20 minutes?
Because they wanted to get it in before primetime TV tonight. They want, you know, they got things to do. They got things on the schedule.
Well, if that's actually the reason.
I actually think there's a lot of alternative motivations when you get to a point. They saw that it was clearing out, and they're just like, let's move forward.
Right, but what if it, I don't know, maybe Hap just had a bad day regardless, but what if it affected him in the first inning?
I'm sure it did. When you sit for 4 hours or three, however many hours it was, 3 hours before you get up after you've already started, or you know you're mentally getting in the, it's got to affect what you do on a given day. Not that that is an excuse, and I'm sure Jay Happ would never use that as an excuse either, but it does. He served up a ball that was, you know, hit like very far in left field
into the bleachers.
That was not, you know, it didn't look like he was sharp early on, and then he got a little bit better after that, but it was a bad freaking day. It was a bad day. I'm chalking it up. Bad day. Bad weekend.
Bad day. Moving on.
Yeah, I had to kill a snake today.
Oh, I heard. I saw the whole video on Twitter. I hate snakes.
I gotta tell this story. I gotta get away from baseball for a second because this is utterly ridiculous. I was going to like do some yard work. I'm going I have to go to Home Depot to get something. And I'm literally walking to my car and a snake just right there on the side of the driveway in the grass, snake in the grass, literally not a big snake, 2 feet ish. And I try to get it and it goes under my car. Long story short, I'm trying to push it out and this damn snake goes in the car.
Why do you have the door open?
There was a door open. It was under the car and it went up into the car. Into like the underbody of the car.
Oh, I thought it went into like your door.
No, the doors were not open. It went up and in. When it goes up and in the car from inside, from the dead center, because it was like dead center underneath my car, where does it go? You know damn well it could find its way inside the car if it wanted to.
Snakes are slithery. Who knows?
And this was not a huge thing. So it's in the car. And like, I'm at a point now. I'm like, I don't even know what to do here. This is a very different situation than I've ever been in. Because how do you know it's gone? How do you know the snake leaves? Yeah, I had my wife standing at the foot of the driveway with our son, watching either side of the car just to see if it went out while I go inside, because I'm going to try to get it out still, but I can't sit there all day and like stare under my car to see if it leaves. How else would I know? Bevan will never drive that car again if she thinks there's a snake in there. I'd literally have to throw the car away.
Yeah. You'd have to push that thing off a cliff. I'd never get in that car. I've never been in that car, but I'd never get in that car if there's a snake in there.
I was in the middle of setting up a computer in my garage and a camera, and I was just gonna record it.
You're gonna stream the snake.
It's more interesting
than the Yankee game today.
We're gonna go to Snake Watch. It's about to be Snake Watch. I was gonna record it, like I had everything set up, and then the damn thing comes out and I take his head off, and that's
with a rake or something
with a shovel. One shot right in the jugular.
What kind of snake was it?
You know, I think it was
like a garden snake or something.
It was a brown garden snake. Yeah, but you know, I'm no snake expert, and I wasn't trying to mess around. It was done, and I'm sorry for anybody who loves animals and is going to yell at me. I'm sure I'll get emails for killing a snake, but you know what? It's my livelihood at that point. I will take out a snake, a squirrel, a bird, anything that tries to enter my car or my house.
I think snakes are one of those animals that people don't really get upset about if you kill.
Maybe. I'm sure there are people that will.
Sure. I mean, there's snake people out there. Like, you had your snake guy in your frat.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, it went in my car. Like, it was attacking me at that point. I was just trying to go to Home Depot. and the snake was guarding my door.
I'm very comfortable stating clearly that we here at the Bronx Pinstripe Show are not a snake podcast.
Not a snake podcast. I hope that's the last time I have to talk about snakes.
Well, let's talk about DJ LeMahieu, who was probably my favorite player to watch this weekend because he had good at-bat after good at-bat. He made so many nice plays at third base. He had the hit with runners in scoring position on Saturday. He had great at-bats today with runners on base. He saw, I believe, 18 pitches. Was it 18 pitches in his first two at-bats, both walks, just grinding out these at-bats, and then later in the game, he punches a ball to right field. So just a really solid debut at third and at second base this weekend.
Yeah, man, he's just a hell of a baseball player. You can tell that, you know, on the defensive side, he's smooth. He kind of glides to the ball. He's just a, you could tell he could probably play anywhere. I'm surprised he hasn't played, because he played shortstop at in college, I think, right? I'm curious as to why he never went back there when he was at Colorado and played second base, and now he's playing some third, but shortstop's not really as much of an option. You know, I don't know if it's just because of his footwork and he's just not as quick, but everything looked good to me today or this weekend. He's very smooth, got a strong arm. And then, yeah, at the plate, just his approach up there, the ability to go the other way is one of the reasons I think that he was brought in here. It plays to his game, plays very well to Yankee Stadium. And then also it's super complimentary to all of the, you know, home run swing and miss guys that we have on this team.
Yeah. And I could actually see, what they did was they gave Andujar the DH day on Saturday. LeMahieu got the start at third, and then they gave Tulo the day off and then moved Torres over, and LeMahieu got the start at second. And, you know, this is not to bash Andujar, because I like Andujar and I like that he is continuing to get better. But my God, do you see the difference between the two third basemen just watching them, you know, in a couple games?
Yeah, I mean, he's just, you know, LeMahieu's just smooth. And when you see a guy that's smooth out in the field, it just looks so much better than a guy that is, you know, choppy with his footwork. And to be fair, Andujar made some nice plays towards the line today.
Yeah, and he got, unfortunately for Andujar, like, the plays weren't completed and they weren't necessarily his fault. Like, the one on opening day that Voit couldn't scoop. And then the one today where it was just, he made a nice stab to the backhand just with a late, little bit of a late throw.
I don't even think anybody else, he gets that guy. I mean, he made a really nice play, a strong throw, and there was just, the kid was a fast runner, and I think that's the reason it happened. It was bang, bang, but still, the kid was flying down the line. So, I mean, I don't think that's on Andujar at all. The fact is that he got to the ball, his footwork was, you know, first step, being quick, getting to that ball, you know, crossing the line, and then getting down and making a solid throw, like a really strong throw, because he's got a good arm. And it was over the top, and it was accurate, and it was right there. Just the guy beat it out. That's all it was. But the thing is that he's definitely, you know, obviously he's put in the work. We've heard all of the positive things from the coaching staff, and, you know, from him, we hear everything we want to hear. And I think we are seeing progress from him. So again, you know, we'll monitor it as the season goes on and see how he continues. But it's just nice to know. I tweeted this on Bronx Pinstripes. It's nice to know that if needed, we have a lockdown guy for third base if needed.
Right, and I know LeMahieu got time at third base in spring training, but over the last couple of years in Colorado, he was just a second baseman because they had Nolan Arenado. So it's not like he has had a ton of time at third base, but looked very comfortable there.
That's why I'm surprised that he hasn't gotten anything at short, like, at all. Why that was never even considered to be an option.
Well, Cashman's not considering it. I heard an interview he did a couple weeks ago. It's not in consideration.
No, I know that. I know it's not in consideration. I'm wondering, you know, why that decision was made, or, you know, because he hadn't played third either in Colorado, you know, much. I know he played it a few times, but not often. So then why wasn't short? So, you know, they obviously must not, or maybe he doesn't feel as comfortable at short. Maybe they don't. I don't know, whatever it is. But the guy is very good, very smooth, and again, lockdown guy at any point, and we have one, and that's huge.
They got the Tigers coming in for three games. Tigers lost 98 games last year. I saw their Vegas over-under was also to lose 98 games this year, so they suck. Castellanos is probably their best offensive player. Miguel Cabrera is still there, but he's old now, and they've got like another 8 years on his contract. They got Fulmer out. He needs Tommy John surgery. Scheduled pitchers are Tyson Ross, Jordan Zimmermann, and Matthew Boyd. Got to get back on track. Like, just turn the page. Play well Monday night against the Tigers. Yankees have Herman either starting or opening or pitching at some point.
Yeah, they have to just turn the page and move forward, and they will. They will do this. Their backs are against the wall a little bit at this point after losing that. I mean, you know what? As a Yankee, like, if you're on that team and you look to see the team that you just lost out in front of your home crowd on opening weekend, like, that's got to be embarrassing. That's got to be a shot to you and, like, looking at what happened. So I hope they take it personally and they come out and they just destroy Detroit, because if they can get some momentum going, they have another opportunity at this Orioles team in Camden Yards next weekend. So, you know, they can throw it right back to them, but they got to start playing well.
What do you think of them talking about the opener?
I mean, it is what it. I think it's like I said in the whenever we talked about this. I don't like the opener, but it's almost born out of necessity. And I think at this point, when you're looking at the guys that they're considering, I get it. I don't know whether they're calling it an opener or not. Like Herman essentially is. If he gets into trouble early, they're going to go with somebody else. But you're thinking about possibly like starting someone outside of the pen.
Yeah, but what they talked about doing is starting somebody in the first inning, like maybe Jonathan Holder or Chad Green, and then having Herman come in like maybe innings two or three.
I just don't understand the point of that. I don't understand the point of it.
Well, against the Tigers, at least, I don't know if they're playing matchups or if it's just something they want to experiment while their starters are on the shelf. But like, you got Castellanos, you got Miguel Cabrera coming up in the first inning, two big right-handed pitchers. Like, maybe they like a matchup with a Chad Green or Jonathan Holder against those guys in the first inning, and then have Herman come in and just face the bottom of the order and take it from there. Let him go through two turns in the lineup, innings two through six, and take it from there.
I guess. I don't know. It seems for this particular situation, like I think the opener is born out of necessity, and this to me doesn't feel like it's necessity. I feel like it's just, you know, you're being too cute and trying to do some things that there's no reason for it. If Domingo Herman has the long term, if the Yankees have the long term vision of Herman being a starter, start the guy. Let him go out there and pitch like everybody else does. I don't know why we would have to jump him in the second inning after and looking at what our other options are. I mean, are you going to put Green, Holder, Sessa? It's just, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Sessa pitched pretty good today. He pitched a few innings, so he wouldn't be in there. And part of it was depending on how their bullpen was used today. And if they're going to use the opener. So like, a lot of guys either pitched or warmed up on Sunday. So I don't know how that's going to affect what they do on Monday. And then on Tuesday, I believe, I don't know if they've announced a starter yet, but it would be Tanaka's regular turn. And then I think Loisek is coming up.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you want to keep your bullpen at a point where you're going to overuse them on a start or on an opener day on the first game of the series when you know that Loisek is going to be making a start at some point? And you very well might have to, you got to have everybody, a lot more guys ready to go at some point with him there. You have to have a fail safe, right? You can't go expect Loisek to go out there and throw 6-7 innings. It's probably not going to happen. So I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it in this particular instance. I don't like it in general. But in this particular instance, to me, it's being too cute and doesn't really make much sense.
I just hope it's a moot point and the Yankees can put up like 9 runs against a crappy Detroit team. Like,
yeah,
their offense should be able to carry them through some of these games. Like, you got one of the best offenses in the last, decade of baseball as far as names on paper go. So start acting like it. All right, give a grade to John Sterling for his home run call. Tulowitzki, man of Troy, for Tulowitzki's first homer on Saturday.
I kind of like it. It's very Sterling-esque. The man of Troy, like the Tulowitzki is good, and then the man
of Troy.
It's a little
lazy. Tulowitzki's a little lazy.
It's okay, but Sterling can get away with that. And then you add the man of Troy after the Tulowitzki, like that just seals it in there as a classic. It's classic Sterling. I'm not saying it's a classic, but it's classic Sterling.
Yeah, people were throwing around on Twitter Tula window, Tula wall is what he should have gone with. But I think that's too like pop culture-y. That's too new for
John Sterling would never say that. John Sterling would never say that.
He's going to say something very corny and punny like Tulowitzki.
Yes, this is perfect. No, this is exactly what John Sterling is. I'm very, very happy with this call.
And it kind of, for Tulowitzki, who's probably been thinking about his first Yankee home run since he was like 2 years old, dude was getting emotional on opening day when he finally got a hit. I think it's less about getting a hit as a Yankee and more about him just getting another hit in the major leagues after being discarded by the Blue Jays. But Tulowitzki, showing emotion this weekend.
Yeah, and he had an opportunity on Sunday to really get that moment and to actually get his Yankee moment, at home in the pinstripes. It would have been to win the game or tie the game. It would have been to tie the game, I think, or maybe win the game. The But he had an opportunity to do it and struck out. So maybe he was trying a little too hard.
Would have been his signature Yankee moment.
It would have been. It would have been perfect. I mean, coming in, pinch hitting for Brett Gardner, ready to go.
Does it make you feel any better that the Yankees lost, that all of the Red Sox starters got crushed this weekend in Seattle?
I'm not really looking at other teams at this point. I just want my guys to be right. I think it's nice to see that. I mean, that's always I'm never going to say that that's a bad thing. I think it's nice to see that. I think it's nice to see Chris Sale having issues after he signs a big contract. You know, Eovaldi going back to the guy that everybody thought he was going to be. But
that is the Eovaldi we thought he was.
But, you know, these guys, again, will probably – I mean, Chris Sale is an interesting – is an interesting player to watch, I think, from now and you know, throughout this contract, because, you know, at some point the problems that he's having in the second half of each year are going to be the entire year. And he's going to be a very, very tough guy to manage and to deal with. And like, they're going to be walking out with kid gloves with this guy at some point soon.
Right. And he had a dip in velocity on opening day. He was thrown in the low to mid 90s versus the upper 90s. I was listening to Boston radio the next day, and their theory is actually that this is by design and that the Red Sox coaches are telling him to not basically go balls to the wall in the first half like he does every year and dominates, and save a little bit for the second half so he doesn't get injured.
I guess that's so dangerous to say, though. Like, it's don't try as hard. Like that's how you get hurt. That's how you get knocked around.
That's how you get knocked around. Basically,
that's how you lose your mechanics. There's a bunch of things that are bad with that. So I can't imagine any team actually saying that to somebody. But at the same time, like, you know, when it is early in the season and you're seeing the velocity lower than you normally do on some of these guys, like, I'm not looking at that as any kind of worry until you get a little bit deeper into the season. Like, there's a lot of times a lot of these guys don't reach, you know, their normal velocity until, you know, a couple weeks into the season when their arm is even more loosened up, especially as you're, you know, I know he's what, 30 years old now, or he's about to be 30, but his arm is a lot older than that. Like, I don't know how his arm is still attached to his body in the first place, but yeah, it's there's a lot of wear on that arm.
Yeah. And look at Betances dealing with velocity issues too. So
right, but he always had that. That's what I'm talking about.
Like, no, I know that's what you're talking about.
Is just like is a slow starter as far as velocity. He's always been like that. Yes, now there's some issues happening with the shoulder, but in the past there have been no issues, and he still had a velocity dip.
Right. All right, let's move into some mailbag questions. We got a few, a lot of angry ones, as can be expected. Three people wanted to talk about Brett Gardner. So I'm going to just summarize it all, but I'll give everyone a shout out. So the first one came from George Kelly at George Kelly 6 on Twitter. Second one from Upstate Sports at Upstate Sports 1. And the final one from our old friend Georgie Costanza, basically asking a few things about Brett Gardner. Number one, why are the Yankees leading him off? Number two, why does he look so bad? And number three, when are we going to see Clint Frazier? That's the tone of all of these questions we got about Brett Gardner.
Clint Frazier is the driving motivation behind all of this. When you see a guy that is up and coming and ready to go, and especially on Twitter, where you see a lot of people who are fans of Clint Frazier already and are ready for the old guard to leave and they want the new guy up, that's going to be the hot take out there for sure. But Gardner didn't have a good series. But at the same time, like, he still works the count. Like, that's why he's up there. We saw in he passed the baton to Judge when Judge got that hit. And that wouldn't have happened if Gardner didn't work the count and get on base. So, like, there are opportunities where Brett Gardner is seeing a lot of pitches, doing his job as a leadoff hitter. And that's why he's there. That's the reason he's there. He's been a leadoff hitter for, you know, the majority of his career. And you look at the way that he works the count and gives the other guys opportunities to look and see what the pitchers are, and that's the reason.
But what has he done in the last year to earn being a leadoff hitter now?
I just don't think there's anybody else who's earned it.
DJ,
besides Hicks.
What about LeMahieu?
I mean, yeah, we could talk about that. It's a new guy, but who's earned it in pinstripes? With Brett Gardner has, because LeMahieu hasn't.
No, I know Brett Gardner a decade of Brett Gardner. Obviously, he's earned it, but I think we might see a switch this week and have LeMahieu leading off, because I think Brett Gardner is still can be a valuable piece to this team. I don't know if he's an everyday outfielder anymore, though.
Well, no, he's not. I mean, that's, I didn't want him back this year because of that. Not that I don't love Brett Gardner. I do. I think Brett Gardner is a good player, and I will remember him fondly as being a New York Yankee. I just think at this time, there was no reason to bring him back for that. Like, they could have gone other routes that were, to me, better opportunities. And if Aaron Hicks is not injured, he's not the leadoff guy right now. It's most likely going to be Hicks. So when Hicks does come back, you're going to see him in that spot a lot more. And you will see, if Gardner is playing, you know, you'll see him in the nine spot. That's where you will see him.
And I think they could just make a switch. Like, LeMahieu was batting ninth on Sunday, Gardner number one. Why not just flip them? Because I think if they're worried about a whole lefty-righty thing, like, there's not much difference there after the first inning.
No, but I think if they are doing the righty-lefty thing, I mean, you don't think, do you think Gardner's going to start if they go up against a lefty?
Yeah, because Talkman's also a lefty. So if Gardner doesn't start, Talkman's starting. I don't think
No. I mean leadoff.
Oh, leadoff? No, probably not.
Yeah. So, but because Hicks is a switch hitter and now he's injured, there's no guy that they've put in that spot, you know, multiple times before. So, you know, who knows? Maybe they might toy with the Aaron Judge thing leading off. Maybe they put LeMahieu in that spot. Like, I think LeMahieu is a good opportunity there. He could do that. Gleyber Torres, I could see in that spot. Those are probably the two guys I would put in there.
Yeah, bad weekend for Gardner. It's a bad weekend for a lot of players. They can just turn the page, hopefully, like we said. Next up, Frank Calendrillo at PDC Frank. Do you think Aaron Boone not having the same players at the same infield positions every day will lead to more errors? So, is Andujar, you know, DHing one day, third the next day, LeMahieu shifting around, switching around Torres and Tulo, Bird and Voit, as we saw playing, you know, one day it was Voit got the start twice, Bird the next day.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you have inconsistencies in the field with guys playing together, it could lead to some issues. But I don't know if it will necessarily lead to more errors. I mean, when you have LeMahieu in there at third base instead of Andujar, you're not going to get more errors. So I think it just depends on the situation. But I don't think it really matters as much when you have like Gleyber Torres moving from second to short. They're still getting the reps in. They're still getting the time in the field, and I don't think it'll affect it too much. I mean, if you're looking at a chemistry thing like up the middle, that's possible. But with all the shifting and things like now, like these guys are shifting all over the field at this point. And like today's game, they're not just in one spot. They're in so many different spots, even within their own position, that I don't think it affects them as much as it would have, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
And we know there's just going to be a rotation between second and short because we know they're going to give as much time off as they can to Tulowitzki.
Yeah. But, I mean, you see guys like, remember when Chase Headley would play second base? I mean, he would literally, Girardi would always, like, move him around and not put him in the shortstop hole, but move him over to, like, second base. Like, these guys are shifting so much. And you know, even if it's not a prototypical shift where you have guys all on the left side or guys all on the right side, there's dramatic shifts within a position, too, where they're, you know, shading way up the middle at second base or at short or third, you know, going almost into the shortstop hole. So these guys have different comfort levels, I think, at this point.
What do you think of the first baseman after the first three games? Are we still calling it a battle?
I mean, it seems like a platoon right now. It doesn't seem like a battle by any means. It seems like they're both playing. But
well, they're battling
again, that's because of the injuries.
They know. I mean, I think they each know that one of them is on this roster long term.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, for them, it's for sure a competition. And there's no doubt about it. Like, they have to, I want one of these guys to, like, take this job by the balls. And the guy that's very clearly the fan favorite at this point is Voit. And I think people are still just kind of over Bird. And, but, you know, we saw early success from both of these guys where Bird hit a home run, Voit hit a home run. And
that
neither
home run,
one of them
that
were great.
Eighth inning home run for Bird on opening day saved an otherwise ugly opening day for him because he struck out three times before that.
Yes, he did, and he was getting it too from the stadium.
He's getting some booze.
He was getting the booze, and then he hit it out. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And but yeah, I think it's you know, there's really no leader at this point. I think they're both playing well.
Yeah, well.
Playing well enough.
Well enough. I mean, I didn't like what I saw defensively out of either of them this weekend.
I still think Bird's a better defender than Voit, but I want to see how Voit, like, I know that we're all still, like, you know, the wool is being pulled, like, we're very excited about this guy. He's a fun dude. Like, he's the guy that everybody wants to be the first baseman. He's like a reincarnate of Jason Giambi. He's like a big meathead that is hitting the ball, hits dingers, can't even eat sunflower seeds. Just give me the home runs. And he goes about his business as like the underdog guy. And Bird's just a kind of like the weird guy in the corner that nobody can relate to. So, you know, it's they're so polar opposite in the way that they are. And I think that the way that like fans look at them, it's just interesting how it's going to work. Because I think people want Voit to be the guy and just to take it away.
I wrote a blog on Friday morning after opening day comparing him to Biff Tannen when the timeline skewed and Luke Voit, like at some point in the last year, something happened and we are in an alternate reality where he was traded after being sent down to the minors a number of times from St. Louis and boom, all of a sudden, 2019 opening day, Yankees cleanup hitter.
it's a nice rags to riches story. It really is for the kid. And then
how do you go from getting traded for Chase Shreve and Giovanni Gallegos to being the opening day cleanup hitter? Like, how does that happen
on the New York Yankees?
Right
on the Bronx Bombers. Yeah, no, it's pretty wild. It really is pretty wild. But I mean, that's a tribute to the guy who's had a lot of belief in his own abilities and just waiting for that right opportunity. And, you know, maybe we should be giving credit to the Yankees analytics staff, who saw a lot of hard hit balls in the minor analytics. Leagues and just thought he was unlucky at some points and that he was an undervalued player. So, you know, I think there's a lot of credit to go around for identifying who he is and then for the guy not getting down and just keep grinding and grinding and grinding. And now he's here.
All right,
it's a good old American story, man. It's the hard work. A little elbow grease.
It is. And he's a Midwest boy, so, you know. All right. Final one from Fleet. Hey, my wife Kirsten and I have been longtime fans of the show, and we're flying into New York from Dallas for a game next week. Can you all suggest for people making an overnight trip a couple places without monster crowds to go for 2 to 3 hour pregame or postgame for nibbles and beer/cocktails? Slight bias towards places with Italian food. The reason I bring this up, well, first of all, is you should probably check out Arthur Ave in the Bronx for Italian food. Ton of good restaurants there. It's like a 10-minute Uber from the stadium. But want to shamelessly plug the upcoming video series we have coming out. Actually, two video series. First one is, you've heard JJ talk about it, Stadium Eats. He's done it in the past, and he's bringing it to Bronx Pinstripes, where he reviews food and drinks and bars and stuff like that in stadiums. The first one, Scott, you were in this video from Steinbrenner Field in Tampa, will be out this Tuesday.
Yeah, we ate some pastrami, we drank some beers, and basically told everybody what we thought of them. So it's going to be a fun series. JJ, like you said, has done it in the past, but he's going to be going around to all the different places inside Yankee Stadium too, reviewing all the food in Yankee Stadium, reviewing, you know, some of the beers, going around to the different restaurants and bars of Yankee Stadium, and just giving everybody kind of an inside look on what to look for, whether you're local and haven't tried everything and want to try new stuff in the stadium, or if you are traveling in from out of town, it's a great place to go and you know, get some good tips on what to eat and where to eat.
And the other video series is Dom, who was obviously, you know, our intern for a while, still helps us out. He started up a video series this week in Yankees baseball where he just fires through all of the top headlines from the week in case you missed anything. Those videos will be out every Friday. There's been two of those videos. All of the videos are going to be on YouTube. They're going to be on all of our social channels as well. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, make sure you guys are following, but go check out the YouTube page where there's a couple playlists, all organized nicely. All right, Scott, we made it through the first weekend. Long way to go.
I literally barely made it through this weekend.
Right.
It was crazy.
And it's like, of course, the first, full episode of the regular season. We got to deal with a late night because of a rain delay and of some more technical issues, of course, because we cannot do a podcast late at night without technical issues, because that would just be too easy.
It would be too easy. That would be entirely too easy. So look, man, I'm ready for Detroit. I think we're gonna see this team turn around, and maybe it's Detroit coming in at the wrong time for their sake, because this team must be hungry at this point for some good wins and to crush the ball. And that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a good rebound against this to get some momentum and then stomp on the throats of Baltimore in Camden Yards.
There we go. We'll talk to you guys Thursday. Next episode, Thursday. We're twice a week for the rest of the season. Let's go, baby.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
What a horrible weekend. You lose 2 of 3 to the frickin' Orioles. I mean, they're terrible. They're going to lose 100-plus games. Horrible defense, horrible pitching. And why do you sign DJ LeMahieu, who, by the way, has been absolutely fantastic to start the season, and you sign him as a contact hitter, and then you put him in the 9-hole? Makes absolutely no sense. Terrible weekend. Gotta regroup. Go Yanks.
But what else can I say? I know it's only been 3 games, but in this 3-game sample size, the Yankees are a shitty team. They suck. They suck. When you lose to the Baltimore Orioles 2 out of 3 in opening series at home, you suck. Now, they get to play another shitty team, the Detroit Tigers, and they're probably going to lose 2 out of 3 to them also. What do you fucking do? This team is so similar to 2018, it's actually scary. You know, the lack of fundamentals, leaving so many runners on base, the pure lack of situational hitting. Starting pitching wasn't so bad this weekend, with the exception of Jay Happ today. Our bullpen is not very good. Or, at the very least, it's been horribly mismanaged by Aaron Boone like it was last year. Just not impressive. And it just baffles me that Yankees can't figure out this freaking high school baseball team, the Baltimore Orioles. Gotta give them credit, but still, the Yankees beat themselves.
Look, it's obviously early. The 3rd game of the season is not the time to begin panicking and thinking that the season is over. We all know this. And obviously at the end of the season, the Yankees will be at the very least in the hunt for the playoffs. But what these last 2 games have showed us is that not hitting with runners in scoring position, making errors, and not coming up big in the moment that it counts is not the recipe to get there. Let's see if we can get it done against Detroit.
My, oh my, what a way to start. First off, we have Boone talking about the team putting their best foot forward. What he needs to do is start putting his foot up people's asses. Number two, we knew it was kind of going to be a rough start with the pitching situation. But my God, this team cannot hit with runners in position. I don't want to single anyone out. But Giancarlo, Mikey Stanton, whatever he wants to call himself. Listen, if he quit swinging at 0-2 sliders in the dirt, I'll call him whatever he wants. Like, this team has to start hitting with runners in position. It's so frustrating. Thankfully, the Red Sox lost an equally crappy team this weekend. We just need to unplug this team and restart it while it's early.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again guys for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.